Hello. As always, Masha tells you stories and welcomes you to the 8th episode of the podcast Film Grazia Artis, or just Film shortly. Here I share tales that inspire and reveal unique experiences of creators, makers and lovers of all kinds. I hope you find this program interesting and encouraging whatever you do. Practice art or enjoy living and learning about other people's creativity, backgrounds and the sentimental artifacts that can be found in any family, home or even pocket. These objects can range from everyday items like photos and letters to more elaborate possessions like jewelry or furniture, and they serve as tangible reminders of past events and people who wrote the letter or a book, wore a ring or made a dress or kerchief. Objects hold voracious sentimentality that goes beyond their material properties. They are connected with social and cultural contexts reflected in a material piece in the variety of traditions, rituals, and cultural norms. Sentimental artifacts can evoke strong emotional responses, such as joy, nostalgia, sadness, or grief, because they are not simply possessions. They hold personal meaning and value to the individual who owns them, often representing a unique aspect of their life or history. They can act as triggers for memory recall, bringing back specific moments, experiences, or feelings associated with the object. In some cases, sentimental artifacts can also function as transitional objects, providing comfort and support during times of changes or loss, particularly for children but also for adults, representing relationships they are connected to. Just open a bookcase. There you find lots of ordinary things. A pile of papers, invoices, receipts, and there is something else, a faded photograph, tucked away for years, edges curled, reminding a loved one or a moment of joy. Nearby, there is a child's drawing, folded and worn. Once it was gifted spontaneously to a parent and carried for comfort. Maybe it's you who sketched it, and this was one of your early artworks. Right on the left, there is an elegant vintage tin. Originally, it served as a candy box for Christmas. Can you remember it? There were the most delicious sweets, caramel, chocolates, and when there were none left, they placed to candy wrappers. Then someone put their old train tickets and matchbox-sized photograph, two coins from a known country, a small button from a garment, and a piece of a blue sea glass, serving as a tactile reminder of a place, the seashore, once seen. You close the box and notice a spine of a book. Over the years, it has gained a rather weary look, and you cannot properly read the author's name on it. Just pull it out and open. Who knows what it keeps for you? Wow, a pressed flower! Delicate and dried, possibly from a first date or a meaningful walk, and a note handwritten on a torn paper. Apologies, affection, or confession. You flip the pages and there comes an off-white and slightly tarnished handkerchief. On the corner, there is a monogram, plain white. Your fingers run along the edges and the smile touches the corners of your lips. The cloth changed color, but the threads didn't. Why do people keep all these items? Why do they store postcards, letters, press flowers, buttons, teddy bears, grandma's dresses, or towels made 100 years ago? What do they experience when touching them? And is there any logical explanation of why it is crucial? What is the other side of a sentimental artifact? Is over-reliance on sentimental value dangerous? We can find lots of explanations, but the most obvious is that such objects connect a person to a story of a care and reflect human need to hold on to touchstones of meaning in a chaotic world, where even the smallest objects can become portals to memory, connection, and identity. If we observe such an artifact from a phenomenological perspective, we will figure out that sentimental items are not just objects, they are things that have meaning. And this meaning is shaped by our subjective experience and perception. Exploration of that aspect of human life has always been curious for artists and philosophers, poets and writers. For many of them, the way people use objects and language to relate to memory, desire, the passage of time and the self appeared fascinating and sensory rich. They provide us with touch and temporality like works and installations made by Anne Hamilton, a renowned American artist known for her deeply poetic and sensory-rich works that explore themes of memory, presence, and the passage of time. In many of Anne Hamilton's installations, worn garments take central place. For her, clothing and textiles go beyond their physical form. They hold traces of human presence and absence. The garments she uses aren't just fabric, they serve as silent witnesses to the lives once lived within them. These pieces carry emotional weight, acting like echoes of the body, filled with memories and intimacy. Through them, Hamilton invites viewers to reflect on personal histories, loss, and the deep emotional layers hidden in everyday materials. Another hallmark of Hamilton's work is the use of whispers and quiet voices. She often integrates recording of texts being read aloud, sometimes barely audible, drawing viewers in close. This subtle soundscape creates a private, contemplative atmosphere, inviting intimate listening and slowing down perception. The spoken word becomes tactile, felt as much as heard, enhancing the sense of temporality and human connection. Sometimes in these voices, people catch a feeling of a familiar one or forgotten a long time ago. The installations engage touch, not only as physical sensation, but as emotional memory. Whether through the brushing of fabric, the repetitive motion of weaving, or the act of writing by hand, Anne Hamilton foregrounds of bodily experience of time, the repetitive or rhythmic gestures, anchor us in the present while connecting us to the past. All that serves a powerful investigation into the material and sentimental, ephemeral to explore how we experience time, how memory lingers in touch, and how language can inhabit space and the objects we store and collect. Comfort and discomfort, true and false, losing and getting, sense and absence of it, are among the typical characteristics individuals include in material objects while possessing them, while they paint our portrait with strokes of intimacy, functionality, and symbolism. Human relationships with things can be a source of emotional grounding, a way of constructing selfhood, and a bridge to relationships with others. But do people experience only positive effects from being surrounded by sentimental things? While sentimental items can hold strong personal and familial value, being over-focused on them can lead to issues like clutter and difficulty in adapting to change. Such items or sentimental totems can become the means of indirect manipulation, pressure, or even political abuse. Heirlooms are powerful tools for connecting generations, passing down stories and values. However, the uneven distribution of sentimental items, even among family members, can lead to resentment and conflict. Over-reliance on sentimental totems can lead to hoarding, creation of unorganized living space, or financial burden, since the cost of storing and maintaining such items can be significant, especially for large families. Strong emotional attachments can make it challenging to adapt to new environments, relationships, or life changes, especially if you have to leave all that sentimental heritage and become a nomad in a time when technology amplifies human presence at the distance far greater than the reach of the hand. Especially when people live like they do not need any physical embodied knowledge, any tactile or face-to-face experience in our online, media-saturated world. And a person finding himself at a crossroads between a step back to preserving memories embodied in 100 small things and a step forward to liberation from them through the imprint and memory of the most significant moments faces the situation of choice to carry on or to let it go. In things we don't throw out, there is always poignant meditation on memory that reflects biographies, while physician remnants are not sacred relics, but emotionally charged triggers. Every one of us has experienced a time when we had to unpack a huge collection of things left by some relatives, a subtle heritage that reveals who these people were. Thus, in the book called Things I Didn't Throw Out, written by Polish writer and graphic designer Marcin Wicha, there is an elusive grief and memory persistence in everyday objects left by the author's mother, a sharp-witted intellectual and Holocaust survivor. These items become narrative anchors, each one unlocking a moment, a conversation, a conflict, or a silence balanced with dry humor to resist nostalgia, even when it seeps in around the edges. In the context of sentimental items, the book speaks volumes. Vija's approach to memory is neither romantic nor dismissive. A lamp is not just a lamp, but an emblem of taste, stubbornness, or unspoken tension. A book is not just a book, but a marker of belonging, ideology, or longing. These items are stored, but also they are unbearably heavy. They clutter not only the rooms, but also minds. This leads naturally to the book's more spiritual undercurrent: how much can or should we keep? Vija never poses this question directly, but it hums beneath every decision of what to toss and what to save. In a culture where grief often finds expression through greater memory, things I didn't throw out dares to ask. Can holding on keep us from moving forward? Do these cherished fragments enrich us, or do they anchor us to pain and stagnation? In this way, the book touches on the paradox of sentimental items, the perceived identity and love, but they can also become monuments to absence. In spiritual terms, they may serve as obstacles to detachment, cluttering our inner space with unsolved longing. Vija never moralizes this tension, but he lives inside with clarity, humor, and quiet courage, thinking about the things he didn't throw out and their emotional archaeology. Such an example shows us that parting with objects is never just a practical action, but a profound negotiation between remembering and letting go. Whether you have a collection of memories of a difficult person who lived in a difficult time, of the shortages, rudeness, and the hoarding instinct shaped by the troubled reality, or went through several other bumpy roads that you are to learn about and untwist through some sentimental discoveries, I wish you to read All That Is Left like a biographical book, or paint a portrait of a person you rediscover, letting all unnecessary go and all that you cherish to stay. And I will be back soon.